Welcome to Real Sports Guys. We're talking real sports here on the Real Sports Guys radio show. We're waiting for our second edition, the next episode. We got Devon, Ray, and Marcus here on the show. And we're going to talk about everything in sports. We're kind of like the neighborhood sports reporters, and we'd love to get into it. We got a lot on the table today, and so we're going to toss it up real quick. You might hear kids, you might hear wives come in saying, get off of it. This is what real guys do. We got real lives, and this is how we roll. So we're going to ask you to join us. You can call in at 1-347-989-0844 if you want to join the conversation. That's 1-347-989-0844. I'm Devon. We got Ray on the line. And then we got Marcus over there. Marcus got his whole – he got the family. This is a family show. And but we're going to toss it to Marcus. I know you got the first – we're going to talk about kids' influence on our ability to talk about sports. But Marcus got a lot of stuff going on.
To touch base on, because I got screaming babies in the background, man. You know, my daughter, my 13-year-old had a basketball tournament today, so my wife went with her. And so I'm here on duty as daddy. So, and this is what we do, real guys talking sports, right?
That's right.
All right. So, you know, kind of thinking about the you know, on the topic of kids, you know, this week, you know, I was feeding my 4-year-old, and we've having one of those dinner time conversations. He didn't want to eat his, you know, we had asparagus, and he's never had asparagus before. And so, you know, I was like, well, you know, you should try it. You haven't had it. And he was like, I won't like it. And so, you know, my idea is you should try it. And as I was trying to coax him into trying this asparagus, I got to thinking about, you know, I've been strongly against the NBA enforcing and making kids go to college for 1 year. When if a kid is ready to play after high school, he should be able to go high school. I mean, he should be able to go to the league. And, you know, with the early entrant deadline passing this past weekend, last weekend, you know, I had been thinking about it. And I can understand, I started to understand, as I'm having this conversation with my 4-year-old, I'm starting to understand why the NBA has that rule in place, you know. From their perspective, it's a business move, of course. But it's also one of those things where, you know, if you're an 18-year-old college kid, high school kid, you don't know what college is like. And I think this is the NBA's way of kind of take your asparagus, try it before you say you don't like it. You know, try it before you say you don't like it. And then if you like it, stay another year or two. If you don't, then the doors are open. But I think the league is trying to really expose these kids to that. And, you know, I think also part of it is that it serves a greater purpose for them in that I think what they also realize is that a lot of these kids that are able to go pro right out of high school, they have a lot of hangers. They got a lot of folks, you know, with their hands in that kid's pocket already. And a year of college may help that kid mature a little bit and distance themselves from them folks. You know, and I think that's needed.
But it might not.
That's true.
Did your son like the asparagus?
No, he didn't.
Okay. But if you didn't like college basketball?
Right.
If you didn't like college basketball.
If you don't like it, if you don't like it, then you do your year. And, again, I'm looking at this from the NBA's perspective. Again, from the athlete's perspective, you want to be able to make your own decision as a young man.
Right.
But I kind of better understood why the NBA, because, you know, it drove me nuts. Just thinking, like, why would they do this? It doesn't make any sense. They're limiting these kids' ability to you know, have a right to make a living.
I think can I chime in on this? I think one of the things that one of the ideas I thought about is kind of like how baseball is set up, in the sense that once you decide to go to college, you're there for 2 or 3 years, but you have the freedom at that point when you graduate high school to make a decision whether or not you want to go into the professional ranks. And so, you know, as an educator, you know, there's a lot of benefits. You know, most people don't know that Shaq has a master's degree.
You know, they don't know that there's a value to getting your education and how it can impact you as an athlete and really control what your brand is. So I think sometimes these kids, and, you know, they're free to kind of, you know, they're free to enter the market the way they want to. But I think there's some times when, as a society, we got to talk, place a value on also the role that education can play for them in terms of what they're going to be in terms of an athlete, a business person, and all those other aspects. So, you know, I like that, you know, that idea of, you know, you choose to go to college or you choose to go to the pros right after high school, and then if you choose to go to college, then you're there for 2 or 3 years. I think it helps the NCAA, but then I think at the same time it allows kids the freedom to go into the league.
It does benefit the NCAA, and the NBA shouldn't be in the business of benefiting the NCAA.
Absolutely.
At the cost of a young man's career and his future. If the NBA is really that concerned about it, if the NBA is really that concerned about it, it could be a free employment condition that every player get a college degree, and they can mandate it and pay for it. They just want, you know, if they want educated players. That's not hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, they're just stifling a young man's ability to go out and make money. So if a LeBron James, let's say, decided he wanted to play in the NBA, and he knew that he could either go to college for 4 years and then go into the NBA, or he's going to the NBA and go to 4 years of college as soon as he got in during the off season. The NBA could do that and not step on anybody's toes. But they're stifling a young man's ability to make money. And they do it, you know, under the guise of this gallant gesture that they're sending somebody off to do something else first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too many teams have drafted those high school players that didn't make it.
Right.
So the NBA is doing nothing more than trying, you know, to stop that situation.
Right. And I agree with that. And that's why I also don't think, again, like from the NBA's perspective, I kind of get it now. I don't disagree with them doing that. Because, you know, I think at the end of the day, they have to look out for their organization first and foremost, you know. And I don't think the rule benefits players at all. But I understand why the NBA has it in place.
Nor does it protect the players. And that's why I don't want them to stand up there and act like they're doing this gallant thing. They're not. They're protecting these owners who can't control themselves.
Right.
Like the Yankees who get themselves into a big salary situation. And is it the I don't see them as concerned for these players. You know, the NBA hasn't had a reputation of being concerned with its players so much.
I do think they care about the maturity of the guys when they get there. Because what they don't, because I think Stern understands, fair or unfair, the league is viewed differently than the NFL and baseball when it comes to players getting in trouble.
Sure.
It is. I mean, the NFL per capita has more arrest charges than the NBA does. But if you talk to the casual sports fan, the average sports fan, you know, they're gonna talk about how the NBA is a league of thugs and this, that, and the other. And it's not fair, but I think they understand that's the climate that their league exists in. And so by sending these kids to college, I think for the league, what it does is it gives these players a new fan base that they may not have had access to as those players are coming in, which in a way indirectly does benefit the player, because a whole bunch of people in Kentucky love John Wall that may not have cared about John Wall previously to him going there. So that's going to make John Wall some money down the line from jersey sales and from people following his career and buying his shoes. So, he's going to get that money back because he went to UK for a year.
Not that kind of money, though, Marcus. The kind of money that if a player gets out there and he's a starter in the NBA, he's going to make money. And you get that rookie contract out of the way, and then you start to make good money.
But I think
you can do that at 18 or 17. You know, that's the only time that I could see there even being a problem in getting these young people in the NBA too early. 'Cause
but Yeah, but and I would add to that.
They got to travel. They got to do other things. They can't even go to most places that their fellow players are going to, you know. And let's face it, the NBA is much like baseball in that they're traveling every week, every other week.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a young man to, like LeBron, be from, you know, Ohio, he was fortunate to go to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he could have been drafted out to Portland. You know, so his family's in Cleveland. He's 18 years old, Portland, and he's on the week, on the road every other week. And
mm-hmm.
he isn't even old enough, you know, to when he came into the league, really not 21. He can't drink. You know, he can't do what a 21-year-old man can even do.
Right.
So, you know.
And what I would add to that is that, unlike any other league, what the NBA has done better than anyone is market the individual.
Right.
So part of coming into this is not just about the money they can make. These young folks got to understand that actually the ability for endorsements is greater in the NBA than any other sport. And so it's just not about the short money that you can make at 17, 18. It's
right.
about how do you develop your brand long term. Because
right.
you can have sustainability. You can make more money even outside the game.
Right.
Because of the way.
But again, the NBA can do that with an 18-year-old player playing in the league. The NBA could send that young man to the nearest university, to wherever he's drafted. You know, if they're going to mandate education, even a year of it, that's silly. Mandate a college degree.
Yeah,
you know?
I dig that, and I can understand that.
But don't stop somebody from playing.
Right, but at the same time, again, getting back to John Wall now, after a year, you know, if he had to come out of high school and he sits down at the table with Nike and is like, I want this type of contract, Nike, he's got more leverage because the rookie wage scale is what it is. He's only going to make so much money for his first 3 to 4 years.
Right.
And where those cats really make their money is endorsements, as Devon was saying. Now John Wall has got a lot of leverage coming to the table. Like, I've been on the national stage for a year. I have a legitimate fan base, and y'all need to fork over the dough. And so I think
when you think about the power of not only John Wall brand but the Kentucky brand behind him,
right,
that's
right.
a powerful
right.
brand. When you talk about making money,
he's gonna make up all the money he would have made last year just by that brand. He'd have made $3 million. He's gonna get $3 million times 10 from Nike. Or Adidas, or Reebok, or whoever he signs with, because of simply his connection, his spending that year in the national spotlight. So in that sense, it's going to help him a lot because, again, the rookie wage scale is what it is. He would have made $3 million salary-wise last year, and he probably would have got a decent shoe contract. But now he comes to the table, and he can really, really bargain for a bigger contract because, I mean, the cat's been on TV for the last 5 or 6 months. You know, they had a decent run in the NCAA tournament. He's All-American. I mean, he's bringing a lot more to the table than if he had to come out as a high schooler. And at that point, people knew him from YouTube. But, again, you know, a cat in Janesville might not know who John Wall was from you know, anybody.
Carmelo Anthony won a national championship. And LeBron came right out of high school. You knew
Absolutely.
Who LeBron was.
And when Carmelo came in, people were talking about Carmelo and LeBron on that same level.
Right.
Whereas if Carmelo hadn't had that year in college, would people have been having that conversation about him and LeBron being who was going to be better? Because it's not a conversation anymore.
No.
And what I would say is you can't use LeBron as the measurement. See, because in every generation, he's what I call an outlier. So because people build that argument. Yeah, people use
Neo.
That's right, because he is not your typical guy coming out with that brand. LeBron was branded in high school on TV the way that these kids are branded in their first year of college.
Yeah.
So
LeBron's games when he was 16.
They were showing his game on ESPN playing against, you know, kids in L.A. I mean, he was branded like most of these kids get branded in that freshman year of college. But they did it for him in high school. Most kids don't have that kind of branding exposure. in high school like LeBron did.
But again, you shouldn't be afforded the ability to stifle a young man's ability to make money simply because you have a moralistic approach to how you do it.
I don't think it's moralistic. The NBA is not trying to. I don't think it's a moralistic thing with them. I think it's a monetary thing. Point blank in the story, they feel like these cats come in more marketable after having a year on a national stage through the NCAA and using NCAA basically as an internship for these cats. You know, this is your year internship before you come work for us professionally. And this is where you build your name and build your reputation. And then when you come in, you're already a commodity for us.
Let's see that. But again, if you know that year, they don't get that year back. That money ain't coming back. You know, they may put themselves out there a little bit better, may be able to market themselves a little bit better, but they're not going to get that year of money back.
Yeah. And this kind of goes into my other conversation I wanted to have about this Rookie of the Year situation. I think Brandon Jennings was hurt in the Rookie of the Year voting by not playing here last year, by playing in Italy. I think he was hurt. It hurt his draft stock.
And then it
hurt his perception. This kid is leading the playoff team right now. Bogut is hurt. Red is out. And he's still making things happen. And for some reason, Tyreke Evans won Rookie of the Year playing on a team that was sub .500.
And to me, that's ridiculous because I think you could have mentioned Brandon Jennings in the same breath as LeBron for the MVP when you talk about, you know, how important a player is to his team.
But I
think it goes back to that point that Marcus was making. We had our entire season watching Tyreke Evans play at Memphis, building that brand, coming in. So he came in with a lot of hype. Then he played well. So he kind of had that in a way that Brandon Jennings didn't have. I mean, people are adjusting, right? They're adjusting. So he came in, he was able to use that brand. Calipari did a good job of selling his brand. He got a coach who sold how good he was, along with people seeing it. So everybody saw that he came in with a lot of momentum, you know, went to Sacramento, and continued to play at that level in the West. So even though Brandon Jennings played at the toughest position, I think, you know, big men hard to play, but playing point guard in the NBA is as tough as it can get. And he hits 50 this year. So
yeah.
He's leading the playoffs.
If you take away that 55-point game, people still don't really know who he is.
That's right.
You know, I think he's still flying under the radar because most people aren't familiar with him. They haven't gotten to see him play. And that's what happens when you have guys that don't take advantage of that year of being in college.
And you can blame that on the small market team, and you can blame it on the media that does most of the voting for the –
But, I mean,
you know.
Evans is in Sacramento. Milwaukee's bigger than Sacramento.
But it ain't on the West Coast.
I think that would hurt Evans even more because of the East Coast bias.
I think that people look at Jennings and if they don't hear of it, he's in Milwaukee. He's sitting in Milwaukee. And nobody expected Milwaukee to do anything, you know, even with Jennings. I think they're waiting to see if Brandon Jennings is even for real, you know. Last year at the draft, they didn't talk about, you know, they talked about him as having the biggest upside in the draft. Which meant that the original thought of him was that he might not be that good. I mean, here's a young man who wanted to play in the NBA, didn't want to go to college, went to Europe, didn't play a lot in Europe, you know, as much as you would think a first-round pick, you know, the very next year in the NBA. So they questioned that. They questioned, you know, why he wouldn't have as much pick in Europe. As he did, and so he had a ton of question marks. He gets into Milwaukee, and he literally blows up.
Yeah,
he literally blows up. And because he's in Milwaukee, unless you're from Chicago, you don't see a game. You don't hear about him.
Right.
You know? So I mean, it's one of those. If you go back, you know, and ask Brandon Jennings, you know, should he have gone to college, are going to Europe and get paid, you know, he'll probably tell you I probably was better off getting paid. And
well,
you know, and again, I understand your point with the rookie of the year, but you know, I'm sitting here in Beloit, Wisconsin, and realizing that Brandon Jennings could have been nominated or should have been nominated for MVP. You know, when you think about the criteria for MVP, you also have to look at the whole idea of you know, where them 149 votes come from.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I bet you, you know, I can only think of three Wisconsin newspapers that would have even may have gotten a vote.
Right.
Maybe two or three Wisconsin reporters that would have been involved in that mix.
Yeah. And my point would be, would that have mattered if he had spent that year at Arizona and he had balled, you know, at the collegiate level in front of all of these writers, in front of all these people that do have votes? If he had played in front of all of those folks for a year and they had gotten to see him, would their perception of what he was doing been different?
Right.
You know, and I think it would have slightly. You know, it may not have won him the award because he's still playing in Milwaukee, but you know, I think it would have opened some other people's eyes who may not have had the opportunity to see him play this year, because really this is the first time a lot of people are getting to see him play at all. Whereas if
right.
he had a year at an institution here, he'd have, you know, he wouldn't have made, you know, the money he was making, but he would have had the opportunity, again, to recoup that money in other ways. I mean, his first shoe contract, I don't know what it is, but I can imagine the fact that he didn't really have a following here in the States when he got back. You know, if he has a shoe deal, it's not worth a lot right now. If he has any endorsement deals, they're not worth a lot right now. They'll be worth a lot in a year or two, but, you know, with that buzz from having a good college freshman year. Huh?
Some of that went back to the draft, too, and the idea that, you know, so many people had so many question marks about him and his character. And, you know, after the draft, when he did the little interview for a New York radio station, not realizing, you know, he was going to open his mouth and create a problem, you know, criticizing New York for not drafting him. And,
right,
you know,
right.
So where we learned about Brandon Jennings, for the most of us, what we learned about him and where we learned about him before he ever stepped on the court in the NBA, there was a lot of people that didn't like him.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
Didn't
I was shaky on him because I hadn't seen him play, and he showed up late to the draft.
Right.
You know, this cat come out like five or six picks after he'd been drafted. I'm like, oh, man, this ain't good. This is not a good sign. This is not a good sign.
No,
you know, how
I
does
remember,
that work?
I remember when the Bucks drafted. The one commentary, and I can't remember who said it, the one commentary that I heard was that at that pick that the Bucks had, Brandon Jennings was the best choice because he may be a top five pick.
Right.
Nobody really
Absolutely.
Knows.
Absolutely.
Nobody really knows.
Absolutely. And the fact that he was hidden from the public eye in Italy has benefited the Bucks because, you know, I think if he had had a year playing in college here, I think he would have been a much higher pick. And I think those questions that people had about his character, that, you know, he would have had a year to kind of, if he could behave himself and do what he needed to do on a college campus, he would have kind of quieted those a little bit. They probably still would have been there to a point, you know, but Beasley went too, and he had the same kind of questions about his maturity. But because
sure.
he was able to go to Kansas State and do the things he did there and stay out of trouble, keep his nose clean for a year, he went number two.
And I would add this about Milwaukee. It's also the impact of who drafts you.
Yeah.
So we think about Milwaukee. Didn't they traded Dirk for a tractor trailer? You know I'm a so you also your reputation of the organization that drafted you. Though, you know, they were like, well, here goes Milwaukee again. You know, maybe Milwaukee. You know, other than, you know, like a Michael Redd or someone like that. You know. Where's the impact player? You know, how can you trust it? You know, it's like when, you know, when Kobe was drafted and they made the deal and, West brought him out to L.A., you know, there's a reputation for a GM. It's like something
right.
about this kid. So for the Lakers to trade and try and get him out here,
he got something going. I mean, people had a chance to see him play, but it was in the sense like, okay, is this kid going to be the real deal? There's something about the GM, about the organization that also adds value. So that might that slows you coming out the gate. I mean, he had so many things that went against him, slowing him coming out the gate. That's why I think the whole thing about branding, particularly when you have a rookie contract and you know what you're making,
exactly.
The endorsements become
exactly.
It's kind of like
that's
it's kinda,
how they're making their money.
Yeah, it's kind of like the, how things have changed in the music industry. It's not about the album. It's about your ability to go out there and do concerts. That's
right.
Where you're making the money on the
right.
Tour.
Get your song on a commercial. You
that's
know?
Right.
Get
that's
your song
that's,
in a commercial. That's where the licensing of the music is where the money's made.
The money
it's
is
the
made.
Same thing with an athlete.
That's because everybody's stealing the music off the computer. You're selling
it exactly, out. And I'm guilty. I haven't bought a CD in probably about 4 or 5 years. My mama didn't raise me. It's just what I pay for.
And you know he was trying to get that fight last night the same way. I was like, watching it was going in and out. It was
you know,
the rounds were going in and out. I was like, did Mayweather hit him or did Chang hit him?
I because my neighbor bought it. My mama also told me to fix my hooking up cable.
let's talk about the fight.
I know how to fight
the wife. You guys had a chance to see it. I want to hear about it.
Well, in between the fog,
kick us off with that.
In the little the fogginess of trying to watch it on the internet, and trying to figure it all out, because we are real guys with real jobs, trying to figure out how to make our money work. What was good about it was, you know, Mayweather was Mayweather. You know, it's a fellow Michigan guy doing what he's doing. Mayweather was Mayweather, and he just controls the fight. It's just. And all these people talking about all these other folks, at a certain point, you got to just realize this cat, what I learned about him, because I watch a lot of 24/7 as well, is that people don't realize how much he just loves to prepare.
Yeah.
So he's never really off. And his preparation is second to none. So people listen to all the talking because he says some crazy stuff. But
yeah.
his preparation, his attention to detail and preparation – so it's like second nature. He's kind of like what I love about him. He's kind of like, you know, like John Wood used to say. You know, we never prepare for any other teams. We do what we do, and we make adjustments. We make them play our game. We will them to do that, and that's what he does. He is able. You can't really prepare for him because he can do it any other way. And to make a person like Shane look progestrian tells you I got a lot of respect for Shane, and is incredible.
Now Shane is 38.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, the young man Mayweather is only 33, but 33 is a lot better than 38.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but every time you see him, I would say that the people use that age. Everybody comes every time they come to Mayweather, they go, "Yeah, but." That's my point.
No. Here's the yeah, but for me with Mayweather. Mayweather's like your sister's kid. You know, you love him, but you want to slap him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You love him. You love him. But he got that smirk about him. He knows he's good. He's really good. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
Last night, you know, when I had a chance to, and I was following it round by round, you know, in the news, and when Mosley hit him,
yeah,
you know, and shook him a little bit, I'm like, yeah, he finally got his ass caught. But see,
yeah, he shook him up.
The thing, but then round after round after round, all they said was that Mayweather won the round.
Yeah.
They said that maybe he won every round after he got shook up. And
mm-hmm.
That's what a great boxer does.
Yep.
Great boxer does.
And you know,
there,
watching a fight.
He's got, but then to his detriment, if you will, he couldn't knock him out.
Yep.
He couldn't knock him out. But that's the way he makes his money.
Yeah, and I think that's a stylistic thing for him.
Yeah.
More than anything.
His style
isn't conducive to the knockout, you know.
Oh.
Again, he technically took control of that fight and just, you know, it was what my uncles would call a slow walk. He's just slow walking. You know, he's just slow walking. I mean, he was sharp, he was quicker than Mosley. And every time Mosey tried to get in, because, you know, after Mosey got him with that first, when he shook him up, Mosey even said it himself after the fight, he kind of got caught up in trying to land that big punch, you know, and he just couldn't get in, he couldn't get close enough to get that punch on Mayweather, because Mayweather was too quick for him. Mayweather's hand speed was too much for Mosley.
People don't want to talk about it. They don't like that part of the fight. They want the knockouts. They want the guy that can punch. They want the guy that can hit you six or seven times.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't want to talk about are the really great fighters like Mayweather, who have as much defense as they do offense.
Yeah.
You know, people love to watch Sugar Ray when he was in there going toe-to-toe. But I personally hated him when he made Marvin Hagler chase him around. But that's the only way he would win that fight. That's the only way he would win that fight. Now, Mayweather, you know, last night, I, from what I read, would stand in there and go toe-to-toe.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as Mosley wanted to step in, he just stepped back.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to give him credit for the other half of the boxing game that he is really good at.
Yeah, and as I was watching, I'm like, you know, if I was to make a comparison as to what Mayweather is doing right now, who would I compare it to him? And I started to think about the Bad Boy Pistons.
That's
right. You know, I started to think about the Bad Boy Pistons, how they people hated them. People didn't really like them because of their attitude on the court and their persona on the court. But at the same time, they technically just dismantled teams.
That's right.
You know, they would just dismantle you defensively. And offensively, they would just dismantle you, and they were equally as potent on both ends of the court. And I think that's what – I think with Mayweather, I think that's what he is. I mean, Mayweather could have gone for a knockout, but, again, that's not his style, you know. And those Pistons teams, they could have scored 120, 115 points a game, but that wasn't who they were. Yeah.
If they didn't play defense.
Yeah.
You know.
And the thing about it is they never apologize for their style.
Exactly.
And that's what I think I say about it, is that they never let anybody externally influence their style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Mayweather, you could say you're not going to influence how. See, unlike Roy Jones got let people get to him about his style.
Yes.
You know, and eventually he said, well, I'm going to try and sit down on my punches, and then he went to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So. As my guy said, we play to win the game. You play to win the fight.
Yep.
And find your style and sit on it. And
yep.
I think that was but you know, Mayweather has never been apologetic about it, and he has enough action, and he makes enough sting every once in a while, knocks your head back, that people say, oh, he might put him to sleep. And then he just said, no, I'm not going to do that to him right now. I'm going to punish
mm-hmm.
him. You know, and so he got some pop on his punch.
The other thing that I truly believe about Mayweather is that he's never faced a fighter who works as hard to prepare as he does.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
He doesn't, and he doesn't, you know, he's not a 9-to-5 guy, you know. When he feels like running, he just starts running. He's like Forrest Gump. You know, where are you going? I'm going to run. Follow me. You know, that's your job. Follow me. You don't tell me when to run. Come along. Let's go. So if it's 3 in the afternoon, he'll run. If it's 3 in the morning and he feels like running, he'll run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he lives in Vegas, he does what he wants. But he does it with as much self-discipline as anybody in the game, if not more.
That's right.
And that's the thing that you've never seen him come in. I've never seen him look tired.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen him breathing heavy. You know, he goes to the corner, he sits down, he listens. He goes out and he does what he's supposed to do. That man is in the greatest shape. So,
and,
like
you know,
you don't believe that age. You know, we'll see him when he's 38. You know, we'll see him when he's 38 years old to see if he can maintain that. That'll be his legacy. If he's undefeated at 38, I don't care if he doesn't have any more fights.
Mm-hmm.
If he's undefeated at 38, he's still fighting and he still has that stamina because he still works that hard. You know, even when he was, you know, you got to remember, this man quit boxing. He retired. He said, I'm done. But 3 in the afternoon, he wanted to go running, he went running. 3 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
if he wanted to go running, he went running. That's
mm-hmm.
the way he lives. That's what he does.
And the most powerful line was, if you watch 24/7, was he said, "People say I train like I'm poor."
Yeah.
You know, it's like the old Larry Holmes line. You know, we say you can't get out, it's hard to get out and train when you wear silk pajamas, right? Yeah. And that old line when he was talking about it, the reason why we say it, at some point lifestyle catches up to you.
Yes.
You don't want to get up and work out, but he's never lost the love for the fight game, mm-hmm. and so he trains like this is the first fight he's ever fought. And I think, but because people get caught up in all the rhetoric, they don't you don't see how he's training. Yeah, he's looking at the camera punching, but look, he's been going for 40 minutes straight.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Punching.
But that's another aspect. You know, they give up, they give up some things. You know, Tyson was a great defensive fighter when he started. You didn't know it because he was knocking people out.
Right.
When he started, but when he started knocking people out, he stopped his defense.
Yep. And left him exposed.
He went so far he's never had a corner man. He got knocked mm-hmm. out. You know, he had a kid in the corner with a glove with some ice in it. He didn't even have anything to take swelling down.
Yeah.
So I mean he just and you should have known that was gonna happen because he'd show up with no socks and shit. So he just got lazier and lazier. He's not doing that. He's training like you say, he's training like he's poor. He still got defense. He's still bobbing and weaving,
When I knew Mayweather was going to win the fight, because me and my wife, we were having a conversation about who we thought was going to win after watching the 24/7s and whatnot. We had a conversation about who we thought was going to win, and I was like, you always put your money on. If you got a cocky dude, because his ego, most guys most athletes that are at the top of their game have unbelievable egos, and that's what the public usually doesn't know about these dudes, is that their egos are
right.
something else. Tiger Woods, his ego is off the charts. LeBron, his ego is off the charts. Kobe, his ego is off the charts. But that's what makes them great. That's what pushes
right.
them towards greatness, is because they have that little bit of crazy in them that says, you know what, I am greater than everybody that's ever done this, and I need to prove it, and every time out I'm going to prove it, and I'm not going to look silly. I'm not going to look silly. And when I saw his work ethic, I was like, oh, he's got this. When you got cocky like that, when you got brash and arrogant like that, plus a work ethic, that's why it's hard to bet against a Kobe. You know, because he lives for taking people's soul. And he's going to tell you about it. And he's going to give you a play-by-play as he's doing it. And that's a hard dude to beat.
Right. Right.
That's a hard dude to beat. I mean, that's being in the Lions' den.
And the one guy that I think fights like him and trains like he's poor, just like him, is Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the one guy, and that's why, this whole issue around, drug testing or not, I'm like, take the blood. Take the blood because we got to see the fight.
But
go back to the ego. Pacquiao is the same mentality. You're not going to dictate this fight to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to dictate this fight to me. We're going to fight. It's going to be, it's not going to be by your rules.
Right, right.
It's not going to be, and there again, there's that arrogance.
And it's one of those situations where Pacquiao may not even have a problem with getting the blood test. He may not even have a problem with doing it, but he has
right.
a problem with Mayweather telling him he got to do it.
That's exactly it. And that Mayweather, if you think about it, has been as good as Muhammad Ali at getting in somebody's pocket, at getting
yes.
in somebody's head.
Yep.
Making them think about something.
The problem with that is that prior to the Mosley fight, everybody would probably say Pacquiao has the upper hand in this argument. But you could already hear the winds of change coming after this fight, and more people are putting Pacquiao on the other side of that line. And Mayweather has a little bit more leverage right now. So what do y'all think about that?
No. I don't think so. Because the same thing could be said about this fight. This is one of the first fights that Mayweather got into in a long time with an opponent that could have beat him. If Mosley would have followed up with that solid punch with another couple more solid punches, we might be talking about how good Mosley was today.
Yeah, but it was that defense.
Okay.
As soon as he hit him with that punch, Mayweather locked that arm up. Mayweather locked his arm. After he hit him, Mayweather locked his arm so that he couldn't get off another one. And that's that defense.
But there again, I'll go back to the 38 years old. Pacquiao, he ain't having that problem.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to think that it would be a better fight. You would like to think that you know, as an undefeated boxer, he is just as cocky. You would like to think that he trains just as hard. You'd like to think if he got that good shot in, he'd figure out a way to get another good one in.
But Pacquiao is also susceptible to getting hit. I mean, if you watch him, he creates great angles, but he's also very susceptible to getting hit and counterpunched. So that, I mean, there's some give and take on that one.
Right. If I'm Pacquiao, I'm not backing down.
Yeah,
I'm Pacquiao,
I agree.
If I'm Pacquiao, I'm not backing down.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because he had to beg to get his ass out of retirement just to fight. You know, I put you off, you put me off, you put me off. Granted, he needs to fight more than Mayweather. You know, at this point, to continue his legacy, he needs to fight, win, lose, or draw.
Because this is about who's the best fighter in your generation. That's what this is about.
Right.
This is about who's the best fighter in your generation.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it, and that's big.
But I believe he has some fears of giving blood. I believe that he fears giving his blood too soon before the fight. He's telling
mm-hmm.
you, I'm not giving blood 24 days before the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, is it 24 days so he could pump himself full of steroids? That's what Mayweather wants you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, even if he doesn't believe it himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he stands on this high ground and says, I want this type of testing because, you know, I think, you know, you steroids. I don't know that he believes that either.
But what he said was,
he got Pacquiao thinking about it.
And he got his line. He's saying, "Hey, I want to fight on the even ground." I mean, he got the high ground on this one because who can go up against him? That's the brilliance of it.
But if I'm Pacquiao, I'm telling you, I'm like Floyd, you aren't gonna get a better fight. You are not gonna get a better fight. You are not gonna get paid like you want to get paid. And neither am I. We're either gonna compromise or we're just gonna quit talking about it.
Yep.
We're just gonna quit talking about it. You can take your blood up until the hour before we go in the ring if you want, but 24 days before the fight, I don't give blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. And if people want to believe you when you tell them I do steroids, even though I've never failed a test, let them believe you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to let you dictate this. I'm not letting you get in my head. Because when this fight is on, when we get ready to do this fight, all I'm going to think about is what I have to do to defeat you.
Right.
Not about the blood, not about the accusations, not about anything else. All I'm doing is preparing for this fight.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Mayweather, I say to you, it's never been done before. People have gone up 7 different weight classes and still held their power. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's for me to know. That's for me to know. And if you want to find
you eat some spinach when you ain't eating?
Blood.
You eat some spinach we ain't eating? Can I get some of that?
I'm just saying.
You do a P90X? What you doing?
You been talking to your dad too much. That's what's wrong with you. You've been listening to your dad too much. You don't get along with anybody. I'm a fighter. I make my money in the ring. If you ain't the more, conscious of boxing.
So you define all odds, right? We can track everybody. We can track De La Hoya. We track everybody else. They exhibit the same kind of power as they got. These are some of the greatest fighters in history. And all of a sudden, you just out of nowhere knocking folks out at the highest weight, at the 7th class you've gone up to. And it'd be different if you were like 5'9", 5'10", but you 5'3" or whatever it might be.
But
it's like you're growing into your body.
I've never failed a drug test.
Yeah, but these are Barry Bonds. I don't know that we know about.
Barry did it. Barry failed the test.
Neither did Pujols. I don't know, but that's the part, and that's what Pacquiao always has to worry about. That Mayweather, because Ray, you probably are right, but Mayweather has positioned his argument so strong, he placed that doubt in your mind, and so when you start talking about the greatest of all time, yeah, you got to put Pacquiao there, but he's already put that seed down there, and so Pacquiao's got to think about that.
That's fine. I don't believe Mayweather is worried about, rather than not, he's going to lose that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think he messes with this young man because he can.
Mm-hmm.
Like he messes with everybody because he can.
Mm-hmm.
And Pacquiao is just standing there going, I'm not the one. I'm not the one that's going to buckle. I'm not the one that you're going to dictate to. I'm a champion in my own right. You know, if you don't want to do this fight, talk about something else.
Yeah.
Talk about something else. I'll continue to fight the people that I fight, and I fight all contenders. You dictate who you fight. You wait till Mosley's 38 years old. I come right back at you. Who the hell you fought? Who have
right.
you fought lately?
Right.
You wait till everybody gets too old. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What is your place in history going to be? You know, you retire, you come back. I don't know what you're doing. You know, you fight people that aren't really fighters anymore. When you have a chance to fight a fighter, you start dictating other rules. Now we got to take blood tests when you say, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Mm.
My place in history is
and see, and that's what Pacquiao needs to. And see, the thing about cocky cats is they don't like to look bad, and that's
no.
what Pacquiao isn't doing. If he wants this fight, he needs to really get on the offense and really dig in and point that out.
Here's another situation though too, is you don't know Pacquiao might not know why he does, why he's been able to do, other than hard work.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And
he might be afraid. You know, he might be afraid to take a test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he also seems like one of those, even though he has the ego, he is one of those corner-following fighters. You know, if you ever watch his fight, when they come back and say, you got to keep your left up, you go out there and look, his left is up. You know what I mean? His left is up. You know, so if somebody that's going to drink this, he's drinking it. You know? He's trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
But he's got the cockiness there. When, you know, when I do what I'm told, I'm whooping your ass.
Right.
Mayweather, if you watch him, and I didn't watch him last night, but if you ever watch him, he's sitting in the corner and looks straight ahead. Three or four guys are talking. He ain't listening. He don't seem to be listening to anybody.
It's true. This is true.
You know, he don't seem to be listening to anybody.
Hey, it's funny because him and his uncle actually never make eye contact.
No,
his uncle always looking out to the side, and he looking out to the side, and like, is y'all
Mayweather's
talking to each other right now?
Mayweather's whole attitude is that he's the smartest one in his corner all the time. He's so smart. He don't even. He didn't even have a relationship with his father. The same cat that brought him to the game. You know, and it ain't like his father didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
Pacquiao, he's like, you know, I don't know his whole story. I'd love to know his whole story. I want to know where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
He might have been like Roberto Duran. They might have found him knocking out horses somewhere. He said, look, stop doing this. You can do this.
Oh, man.
All you got to do is listen to what I say. You know, Mike Tyson was that way.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson had a good corner, nobody was beating him.
Mm-hmm.
When Mike Tyson had a good corner, nobody was beating him.
Yeah.
Nobody. You know? But when you sit there and you watch his corner, they say, you got to, you know, you got to keep your left up. basketball. It's like his ass, he go out there, his left was out.
Now, that's a I love it. Knocking out horses. This is what you get, knocking out horses.
Oh, man.
That's your folklore. That's your folklore. Right away. Take him around to the bar. Pull the guys out of the bar. You know, here my 15-year-old son, he'll knock out this horse. They make bets. They hit him, Roberto. Bam. Knock the horse out. Now, it's true or not, I don't know. I also said he's taking a pre-fight meal with pigeons.
Oh, see, this is the stuff.
Say before the fight, you're drinking pigeon milk.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's the lore. The fighters from the U.S., you know, you get to see them in golden gloves. They're like you are. They're like me.
Right.
You know, like, but them cats, you know, them cats like Pacquiao, like Alexis Arguello, you don't know what they're doing. You know, hold on to
you don't know what they grew up doing.
Right.
you just see the end product. You just know they're killing crush. They're crushing folks.
Yeah.
But my goodness. Yeah. But as we're rolling down here, we got a little bit of time left here in the show. We covered a lot here over most of this hour. Is there a hot topic we didn't get to that we might want to hit again next week?
We still got enough time, don't we, to talk about Howard's contract.
Yeah, let's do it. Why don't you put up the record?
We can take that on.
You know, if you think about what the Phillies did for Howard in signing him to extending his contract, you know, to the tune of about, what, $25 million a year?
Yep.
Isn't that what he got, 5 years, $25
yep.
million?
Yep.
If you think about what they did for him and what the Brewers are doing to Prince Fielder, and making him play out his contract and not really even talking about signing him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in fact speculating that they can't sign him. So mm-hmm. you're probably going to see him traded unless they just start talking really nice. Because if I'm Prince Fielder, I don't know why I would talk to you now.
Right.
You've already seen what they're doing for Howard. You got to wonder what Pujols is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to know if anybody has any comments or not. You know, what is this extension for Howard at, what, 30? Is he 30 or 32?
I think he's 32, I want to say. I think he's 32.
Then you have Prince. He's 26. He's doing about the same thing
on
a lesser team. You know, they signed Braun to an extension, but they don't really negotiate with him.
Yeah.
You know, Howard's getting paid. What's going to happen to Prince? What is going to happen to Pujols? What is going to happen to some of these other young players that are coming up on contract years?
Yeah, well, Pujols is going to get his money. I think Pujols is going to stay in St. Louis. They have enough of a fan base and enough revenue coming in where they can pay him and still be able to put some pieces around him. I think in Milwaukee, the biggest thing is that they gave Braun his money, and Braun's money is fairly reasonable. Prince is rolling with Scott Boras, and Scott Boras is like the Monopoly man. All right, he don't play. He's coming for your money. He's
right.
coming for the money, and he knows that Prince has the potential to get a huge deal. And so, if Milwaukee's not going to give him a huge deal, which I don't think they can, and still be able to field the team, and that's a structural thing with baseball. It's a structural thing, and I mean, I think that is what it is. I think Prince is going to be a Yankee or a Dodger or an Angel or one of those big market teams. God forbid he becomes a Cub. I would love him to become a White Sox, but I don't think that's going to happen because Reindorf is cheap. But
You know, I think Pujols is gonna get his money, and he's gonna get, and he may, I think he may, Pujols may get that next A-Rod deal where it's like, that's the new benchmark. You know, I can see St. Louis trying to give Pujols 30 a year. Now, can they do that? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if he were to get that.
Before Howard signed his contract, they were talking about Prince asking for 25 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, oh, he can't get that much. But remember now, A-Rod is what, 27 and a half, 28 million, 27 and
yeah.
a half million? He got that contract when he was 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the contract he signed in Texas, that 25 or that 10-year, $250 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
That brought him to New York. Texas paid almost half of that when they traded him. New York still re-signed him for 27 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Howard, at 30 plus, gets 25 a year. Pujols may get 30. Pujols is 30 or 32. Prince is 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
26 years old. So now, if I'm Prince, because I heard Howard signed that $25 million a year contract,
mm-hmm.
I'm calling Boris and going, just wait. Just wait. Let's see what Pujols gets.
Yeah. Pujols is 29. He's the same age as me.
Right.
Well, actually, no, he just turned 30 this year. So he just turned 30 this year.
Okay.
So.
Okay. If I'm Prince, I want Pujols' money. Not because I played as well as he has, but because everything points in that direction.
Yeah.
And
that's why I think he's going to wind up a Yankee. Because the Yankees can give him that money. The Yankees can give Prince the money. And being in the AL, Prince can actually play out that deal and not have to worry about playing the field. You know, if they give him an 8-year, you know, $30 million deal, they don't have to worry about the back end of that deal where he's not the same type of player,
this
even though
he'll
only be 34, 35.
I see New York with the inability to swallow Teixeira in the same way that Boston can swallow Big Pop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody in Boston would understand why you went and got Prince if you had to trade or get rid of Big Pop. But I don't think you're going to be able to get rid of Teixeira in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get rid of A-Rod. Jeter's not going anywhere. You're not going to sell Sabathia. You got to figure out how you can market this year.
Mm-hmm.
And is it that big of an upgrade that you would spend that kind of money?
Yeah.
And I could see the Yankees bidding for him only to make sure that he gets Pujols-type money.
Uh-huh.
So that Boston can't go out and get somebody else right after.
Right, right.
Make them pay.
Yep.
Make them pay.
Yep.
Well, and also, and we'll get to this, probably next week, but also, there's also, along with structural, there's philosophy of a team,
mm-hmm.
especially small market teams. You know, how do you develop your philosophy in terms of how you're going to structure a team? You think about organizations like Utah. You think about the Pittsburgh Steelers. You think about, you know, if beyond the structural issues of the league, what's your philosophy and how do you do that? And how do you develop a core? I think that's also another issue that some of these small market teams don't do a good job across the board, finding those cornerstones that you pay, finding those managers or coaches, and that this is our philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is how we're going to run our program. And then it allows you to go get a fielder and a Bron and some other pieces, but then – You got strong managers, whatever that philosophy might be, and that's what you stick to.
Baseball doesn't have that philosophy, and I think that's the detriment of baseball and will be the death of baseball. If they don't come up with a salary cap, if they don't come up with a structure at some point, I know that I don't watch baseball the way that I used to.
Yeah, I don't either.
You have New York's, you have Boston's, you have, you know, the teams like Milwaukee are nothing but the minor leagues for the teams like Boston.
For real.
I mean,
that's
it.
For real.
And
you hit it on the head, yeah.
And what's more important and what we should talk about next week is what the NFL is doing. Because if they don't keep their salary cap, they are going to lose the greatest game in the world.
Yeah, because right now they got it on lock. They got a stranglehold on the sports world. And the worst thing they could do is lose the current the revenue sharing structure that they have. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
All right. We've got to close it down. Thank y'all again. The next week, Love That Baby Sports Market. We out of here. It's the Real Sports Guys. One more time. Look for y'all to support y'all join us next week. Until then, have a good week. Check us on Facebook. Check us on Twitter. Take it easy.
All right.